Welcome to February on this rain-soaked morning that's fortunately not so terribly cold, but still smacking of New England winters. Perseverance seems like a good theme for this month of February, actually, as we are practicing steadfastness in doing something despite difficulty or delay. We are practicing showing up, for one thing, and some semblance of cheerfulness through it all, maybe. Our perseverance this month has to do with getting out of bed, putting one foot in front of the other, no matter the temperature or outside conditions, with the hope, the expectation that warmer weather is on its way. This season won't last forever, and so we persevere through the long haul of winter's challenge. And the good humor part, if we have it, the cheerfulness, that might be the grace part. The word, the very idea of grace, which is in our title for this morning's sermon, Grace for the Long Haul, captures the imagination, doesn't it? It is a lovely word all by itself. But what do we mean by it exactly? What is grace after all? And does it have any message for us in our especially rational and pragmatic tradition? I think it's worth a bit of time this morning to consider how we might expand our use of it and to recognize the way it offers a gentleness to our times of dogged persistence. In our offertory this morning, Max Kapp lends words that make me imagine the mystery of what grace might be, what it might be for us. Having gone to the shore and gazed upon infinity, there came a sense of peace. Some whisper calmed my soul. Some ancient ministry of stars had made my spirit whole. Isn't that lovely? Grace as a whisper, and an ancient ministry of stars that makes the spirit whole. I've mentioned before that Max Kapp was originally a Universalist minister, later, after the merger, a Unitarian Universalist minister. He closes this hymn with the words, "Upright I rose from bended knee to meet the asking years," which I think must have come from Zora Neale Hurston's seminal work, "Their Eyes Were Watching God." She writes, "There are years that ask questions and years that answer." If I had to guess, I think we are in the former, the years that ask questions of us. Like, what the heck is going on? And where are we headed? And some of us might even ask, when will this end? Years ago, I preached a sermon with the Reverend James Ford about those times when we have the feeling that we are not in Kansas anymore. And this was clearly long before our present political concerns, so that we can be assured this is not the first time we have dealt with feeling estranged from our comfort zones. In fact, we may feel that way for any number of reasons, maybe very personal ones. Losses or changes in our lives or challenges, even as we may be feeling them relative to the turn of events that are our daily news cycle. One of the most interesting books I read in seminary, James said, was by Robert McAfee Brown, who, by the way, was a Presbyterian minister, a civil rights leader, an anti-war movement person in the 60s. The title was Creative Dislocation, The Movement of Grace. Brown observed, "Dislocation, with all its risks, is surely preferable to stagnation, which is the temptation when we cling too powerfully to what we have. When we do that, growth ceases." And Ford continued, "Brown then pointed out the alternative, being open, allowing ourselves to be vulnerable, while it has its own dangers, is also to open ourselves to the movement of grace." It's true that for many of us, these times we are experiencing feel very much like something other than the Kansas we thought we knew. We feel, using Brown's word, possibly dislocated. As I said, there may be many reasons for any one of us to feel that way at any given point in time. And it is also true that the long haul I referenced in the title has many definitions. The experience of time is sometimes relative. The long haul may mean persevering with adversity for the rest of your life. It may mean persevering for the next 15 minutes. While I would not wish the former on you, I also hope it is not the latter that feels like a long haul. But times of adversity, of challenge, are not linear or even necessarily a function of measurable units. They may be a day, they may be a week, a year, they may be generations, they may be a moment. We wonder sometimes, don't we, how did I survive that moment? But they require tenacity and determination. And we wonder, where does that come from? The familiar refrain from the book of Psalms, number 137, when the Israelites are displaced from their temple and homeland, the way we may feel, in fact, displaced or dislocated in our lives at times. By the waters of Babylon, there we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. On the willows there we hung up our lyres, for there our captors required of us songs and our tormentors mirth, saying, "Sing us one of the songs of Zion." But how shall we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? How shall we make sense of what we don't understand or of what we struggle to imagine overcoming? How shall we persevere? And Michael Moore reminds us, together, we can sustain a very long, beautiful song for a very, very long time. You don't have to do it all, but you must add your voice. By the grace of our connection to each other, we sing, and together we sing. Together we inspire and assist and carry on. But on our own, that may feel different. I found a blog post by a pastor from Sovereign Grace Church in Indiana. "I'm starting to truly understand grace when grace surprises me," he said. "Unearned," he suggests. "Grace is wonderfully, surprisingly, delightfully not fair," he assures us. And as we might suspect, given his affiliation with an evangelical Christian church, for him, that grace is a gift of God. We often hear it so, God's grace. Another blog suggests the single most important thing in the Bible is the concept of grace. So for some of us, grace has a starting point, an origin. But it begs the question for those of us who do not ascribe to the Christian tenets or even to the idea of a God who offers grace, is there relevance for us? Can we be surprised by grace for ourselves, even when the idea of God does not speak to us? It may not surprise you. I am always encouraging the idea of expanding our construct of that word, of not limiting our understanding of what we might name the spirit of life to a hand that doles out blessings, but by acknowledging awe and wonder, mystery and compassion as a function of something greater than ourselves, that we might have access to the presence of a reality that is not limited or constrained by our human understanding, but rather a function of our experience in the world, that recognizes a greater whole, a greater wholeness than we can often name. But even setting that construct aside, when we hear the words of Maya Angelou assuring us, "Still I rise, like dust I'll rise, like hope springing high I'll rise, like air I'll rise," can we experience her certainty as the possibility of grace? Can we imagine that degree of return, of rising again in our own lives as a gift unearned? There's a great song by folk singer Cheryl Wheeler called Gandhi Buddha. Do any of you know it? I encourage you to look it up on YouTube. As she tells it, had she not already written it years before, she would have written it for her spouse Kathleen when they married. I suppose stranger things have come to pass. Many's the forest I can't see. I was so down and lost and fading fast. How did you find your way to me? I must have been Gandhi or Buddha or someone like that. I must have saved lives by the hundreds everywhere I went. I must have brought rest to the restless, fed the hungry too. I must have done something great to get to have you. Isn't that great? It's so poignant and so lovely and so dear. And it always makes me wonder why we think good things can only come if we earn them. If we have not been the Buddha or Gandhi, neither of which, by the way, we might remember were perfect, do we not deserve goodness? Because actually, I think there is a mystery called grace that abounds. And you don't have to believe it is meted out by a greater being. Though if there is such a thing, our universalist roots would assure us that that grace is offered to any and all. It is independent of a giver, I think, the way one feels gratitude, regardless of some entity to feel grateful to, or the way prayer does not require a recipient. Writer Annie Lamott suggests, I do not at all understand the mystery of grace, only that it meets us where we are, but does not leave us where it found us. What a lovely thought is that. Might we imagine a goodness that simply exists, that arrives to us in times of need, which is, by the way, all the time? When can we not make use of a bit more goodness in this world? If bad things can happen to good people, and we know that they can, and we know they do, then why is it so hard to imagine that good things happen as well, unbidden and unearned, that life on occasion offers us beauty and comfort and love and peace? And that we might understand this as grace, that we might accept it as a tool for our well-being, that trusting it would help us manage the tough times, the bumpy roads, the confusion, the struggle. We are bombarded by negative these days. There is so much fear, so much confusion, so much backing into our own corners in desperate search for a reprieve from our dislocation. Have we become so cynical that we cannot imagine good? Are we so wounded by life that we have lost a place for the mystery that might be grace? Let us not submit. Let us not give in to the temptation to throw our hands up in despair, but rather let us be open to the possibility of an energy, a whisper, an ancient ministry of stars, a gift that lifts our resolve to persevere, but not just to persevere. Perseverance alone is a kind of stubbornness. Let our dislocations be times of opportunity for the mystery we might call grace to help us grow, to help us sing strong, long, beautiful songs together, but also to be hopeful in our individual hearts. Can we be willing to feel the good that abounds so that our years or days or moments of long haul might be filled as well with all that grace has to offer us, a calmness, a wholeness, perhaps. Let that be so. Let us be assured that we can be more whole even in our wandering. That, as Annie Lamott suggests, we will not be left where we were found. There is grace, and it is there for each of us. In these asking years, when our hearts are so open and so vulnerable, grace is a presence that will help to carry us through every long haul. I know it in my heart to be so, and I hope you do too.